Chapter 103. We were to make four Chigwell in four glass coaches, each with a trifling company of six or eight inside, and a little boy belonging to the projectors on the box, and to start from the residence of the projectors, Woburn Place, Russell Square, at 10:30 precisely. We arrived at the place of rendezvous at the appointed time, and found the glass coaches and the little boys quite ready, and divers young ladies and young gentlemen looking anxiously over the breakfast parlor blinds, who appeared by no means so much gratified by our approach as we might have expected, but evidently wished we had been somebody else. Observing that our arrival in lieu of the unknown occasioned some disappointment, we ventured to inquire who was yet to come, when we found from the hasty reply of a dozen voices, that it was no other than the young lady's young gentleman. "I cannot imagine," apostrophe said the mamma, "what has become of Mr. Balaam, always so punctual, always so pleasant and agreeable. I am sure I cannot think." Apostrophe as these last words were uttered in that measured, emphatic manner which painfully announces that the speaker has not quite made up his or her mind what to say, but is determined to talk on nevertheless, the eldest daughter took up the subject, and hoped no accident had happened to Mr. Balaam, upon which there was a general chorus of "Dear Mr. Balaam!" Apostrophe apostrophe and one young lady, more adventurous than the rest, proposed that an express should be straightway sent to dear Mr. Balaam's lodgings. This, however, the papa resolutely opposed, observing, in what a short young lady behind us termed quite a bearish way, apostrophe that if Mr. Balaam didn't choose to come, he might stop at home. At this all the daughters raised a murmur of opa. Apostrophe apostrophe except one sprightly little girl of 8 or 10 years old, who, taking advantage of a pause in the discourse, remarked that perhaps Mr. Balaam might have been married that morning, for which impertinent suggestion she was summarily ejected from the room by her eldest sister. We were all in a state of great mortification and uneasiness, when one of the little boys, running into the room as airily as little boys usually run who have an unlimited allowance of animal food in the holidays, and keep their hands constantly forced down to the bottoms of very deep trouser pockets when they take exercise, joyfully announced that Mr. Balaam was at that moment coming up the street in a hackney cab. And the intelligence was confirmed beyond all doubt a minute afterwards by the entry of Mr. Balaam himself, who was received with repeated cries of "Where have you been, you naughty creature?" Apostrophe apostrophe whereunto the naughty creature replied that he had been in bed, in consequence of a late party the night before, and had only just risen. The acknowledgement awakened a variety of agonizing fears that he had taken no breakfast, which appearing after a slight cross-examination to be the real state of the case, breakfast for one was immediately ordered, notwithstanding Mr. Balaam's repeated protestations that he couldn't think of it. He did think of it though, and thought better of it too, for he made a remarkably good meal when it came, and was assiduously served by a select knot of young ladies. It was quite delightful to see how he ate and drank, while one pair of fair hands poured out his coffee, and another put in the sugar, and another the milk, the rest of the company ever and anon casting angry glances at their watches, and the glass coaches, and the little boys looking on in an agony of apprehension lest it should begin to rain before we set out. It might have rained all day, after we were once too far to turn back again, and welcome, for aught they cared. However, the cavalcade moved at length, every coachman being accommodated with a hamper between his legs something larger than a wheelbarrow, and the company being packed as closely as they possibly could in the carriages, according, apostrophe as one married lady observed, to the immemorial custom, which was half the diversion of gypsy parties. Apostrophe thinking it very likely it might be we have never been able to discover the other half, we submitted to be stowed away with a cheerful aspect, and were fortunate enough to occupy one corner of a coach in which were one old lady, four young ladies, and the renowned Mr. Balaam, the young lady's young gentleman. We were no sooner fairly off Then the young lady's young gentleman hummed a fragment of an air, which induced a young lady to inquire whether he had danced to that the night before. By heaven, then, I did, apostrophe replied the young gentleman, and with a lovely heiress, a superb creature, with £20,000. Apostrophe you seem rather struck, apostrophe observed another young lady. Gad, she was a sweet creature, apostrophe returned the young gentleman, arranging his hair. Of course she was struck too, apostrophe inquired the first young lady. How can you ask, love? Apostrophe interposed the second. Could she fail to be? Apostrophe. Well, honestly I think she was, apostrophe observed the young gentleman. At this point of the dialogue, the young lady who had spoken first, and who sat on the young gentleman's right, struck him a severe blow on the arm with a rosebud, and said he was a vain man, whereupon the young gentleman insisted on having the rosebud, and the young lady appealing for help to the other young ladies, a charming struggle ensued, terminating in the victory of the young gentleman, and the capture of the rosebud. This little skirmish over, the married lady, who was the mother of the rosebud, smiled sweetly upon the young gentleman, and accused him of being a flirt, the young gentleman pleading not guilty. A most interesting discussion took place upon the important point, whether the young gentleman was a flirt or not, which being an agreeable conversation of a light kind, lasted a considerable time. At length, a short silence occurring, the young ladies on either side of the young gentleman fell suddenly fast asleep, and the young gentleman, winking upon us to preserve silence, won a pair of gloves from each, thereby causing them to wake with equal suddenness, and to scream very loud. The lively conversation to which this pleasantry gave rise, lasted for the remainder of the ride, and would have eked out a much longer one. We dined rather more comfortably than people usually do under such circumstances, nothing having been left behind, but the corkscrew and the bread. The married gentlemen were unusually thirsty, which they attributed to the heat of the weather. The little boys ate to inconvenience. Mamas were very jovial, and their daughters very fascinating. And the attendants, being well-behaved men, got exceedingly drunk at a respectful distance. We had our eye on Mr. Balaam at dinner time, and perceived that he flourished wonderfully, being still surrounded by a little group of young ladies, who listened to him as an oracle, while he ate from their plates, and drank from their glasses in a manner truly captivating from its excessive playfulness. His conversation, too, was exceedingly brilliant. In fact, one elderly lady assured us that in the course of a little lively badinage on the subject of ladies' dresses, he had evinced as much knowledge as if he had been born and bred a milliner. As such of the fat people who did not happen to fall asleep after dinner entered upon a most vigorous game at ball, we slipped away alone into a thicker part of the wood, hoping to fall in with Mr. Balaam, the greater part of the young people having dropped off in twos and threes, and the young ladies' young gentlemen among them. Nor were we disappointed, for we had not walked far, when, peeping through the trees, we discovered him before us, and truly it was a pleasant thing to contemplate his greatness. The young lady's young gentleman was seated upon the ground, at the feet of a few young ladies who were reclining on a bank. He was so profusely decked with scarfs, ribbons, flowers, and other pretty spoils, that he looked like a lamb, or perhaps a calf would be a better simile adorned for the sacrifice. One young lady supported a parasol over his interesting head, another held his hat, and a third his neckcloth, which in romantic fashion he had thrown off. The young gentleman himself, with his hand upon his breast, and his face molded into an expression of the most honeyed sweetness, was warbling forth some choice specimens of vocal music in praise of female loveliness, in a style so exquisitely perfect, that we burst into an involuntary shout of laughter, and made a hasty retreat. What charming fellows these young ladies' young gentlemen are! Ducks, dears, loves, angels, are all terms inadequate to express their merit. They are such amazingly, uncommonly, wonderfully, nice men. Conclusion. As we have placed before the young ladies so many specimens of young gentlemen, and have also in the dedication of this volume given them to understand how much we reverence and admire their numerous virtues and perfections, as we have given them such strong reasons to treat us with confidence, and to banish, in our case, all that reserve and distrust of the male sex which, as a point of general behavior, they cannot do better than preserve and maintain, we say, as we have done all this, we feel that now, when we have arrived at the close of our task, they may naturally press upon us the inquiry, what particular description of young gentlemen we can conscientiously recommend. Here we are at a loss. We look over our list, and can neither recommend the bashful young gentleman, nor the out-and-out young gentleman, nor the very friendly young gentleman, nor the military young gentleman, nor the political young gentleman, nor the domestic young gentleman, nor the censorious young gentleman, nor the funny young gentleman, nor the theatrical young gentleman, nor the poetical young gentleman, nor the throwing-off young gentleman, nor the young lady's young gentleman. As there are some good points about many of them, which still are not sufficiently numerous to render any one among them eligible, as a whole, our respectful advice to the young ladies is to seek for a young gentleman who unites in himself the best qualities of all, and the worst weaknesses of none, and to lead him forthwith to the hymeneal altar, whether he will or no. And to the young lady who secures him, we beg to tender one short fragment of matrimonial advice, selected from many sound passages of a similar tendency, to be found in a letter written by Dean Swift to a young lady on her marriage. The grand affair of your life will be to gain and preserve the esteem of your husband. Neither good nature nor virtue will suffer him to esteem you against his judgment. And although he is not capable of using you ill, yet you will in time grow a thing indifferent and perhaps contemptible, unless you can supply the loss of youth and beauty with more durable qualities. You have but a very few years to be young and handsome in the eyes of the world, and as few months to be so in the eyes of a husband who is not a fool, for I hope you do not still dream of charms and raptures, which marriage ever did, and ever will, put a sudden end to. Apostrophe, from the anxiety we express for the proper behavior of the fortunate lady after marriage, it may possibly be inferred that the young gentleman to whom we have so delicately alluded is no other than herself. Without in any way committing herself upon this point, we have merely to observe that we are ready to receive sealed offers containing a full specification of age, temper, appearance, and condition. But we beg it to be distinctly understood that we do not pledge ourselves to accept the highest bidder. These offers may be forwarded to the publishers, Messrs. Chapman and Hall, London, to whom all pieces of plate and other testimonials of approbation from the young ladies generally are respectfully requested to be addressed. Sketches of Young Couples, An Urgent Remonstrance, and C, to the gentlemen of England, being bachelors or widowers, the remonstrance of their faithful fellow subject, sheweth that her most gracious majesty, Victoria, by the grace of God of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland Queen, defender of the faith, did, on the 23rd day of November last past, declare and pronounce to her most honorable Privy Council, Her Majesty's most gracious intention of entering into the bonds of wedlock. That Her Most Gracious Majesty, in so making known Her Most Gracious intention to Her Most Honorable Privy Council as aforesaid, did use and employ the words, "It is my intention to ally myself in marriage with Prince Albert of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha." Apostrophe, that the present is bissextal, or leap year, in which it is held and considered lawful for any lady to offer and submit proposals of marriage to any gentleman, and to enforce and insist upon acceptance of the same, under pain of a certain fine or penalty, to to wit, one silk or satin dress of the first quality, to be chosen by the lady and paid her owed for by the gentleman. That these and other the horrors and dangers with which the said bissextal, or leap year, threatens the gentlemen of England on every occasion of its periodical return, have been greatly aggravated and augmented by the terms of Her Majesty's said most gracious communication, which have filled the heads of divers young ladies in this realm with certain new ideas destructive to the peace of mankind, that never entered their imagination before. That a case has occurred in Camberwell, in which a young lady informed her papa that she intended to ally herself in marriage with Mr. Smith of Stepney, and that another, and a very distressing case, has occurred at Tottenham, in which a young lady not only stated her intention of allying herself in marriage with her cousin John, but, taking violent possession of her said cousin, actually married him. That similar outrages are of constant occurrence, not only in the capital and its neighborhood, but throughout the kingdom, and that unless the excited female populace be speedily checked and restrained in their lawless proceedings, most deplorable results must ensue therefrom, among which may be anticipated a most alarming increase in the population of the country, with which no efforts of the agricultural or manufacturing interest can possibly keep pace. That there is strong reason to suspect the existence of a most extensive plot, conspiracy, or design, secretly contrived by vast numbers of single ladies, in the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland, and now extending its ramifications in every quarter of the land, the object and intent of which plainly appears to be the holding and solemnizing of an enormous and unprecedented number of marriages, on the day on which the nuptials of her said most gracious majesty are performed. That such plot, conspiracy, or design, strongly savors of popery, attending to the discomfiture of the clergy of the established church, by entailing upon them great mental and physical exhaustion, and that such popish plots are fomented and encouraged by Her Majesty's ministers, which clearly appears, not only from Her Majesty's principal Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs traitorously getting married while holding office under the crown, but from Mr. O'Connell having been heard to declare and avow that, if he had a daughter to marry, she should be married on the same day as her said most gracious majesty. That such arch plots, conspiracies, and designs, besides being fraught with danger to the established church, and, consequently, to the state, cannot fail to bring ruin and bankruptcy upon a large class of Her Majesty's subjects, as a great and sudden increase in the number of married men occasioning the comparative desertion. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.